Continuing with chapter 7. They advanced with slow, weary steps. The children's eyes were heavy with sleep, and they clung to their mother's clothes. For the most part, the babies were carried in their father's arms, or else wheeled in their carriages. The SS guards remained before the crematorium doors, where a poster announced, "Entrance is strictly forbidden to all who have no business here, including SS." The deportees were quick to notice the water faucets, used for sprinkling the grass, that were arranged about the courtyard. They began to take pots and pans from their luggage and broke ranks, pushing and shoving in an effort to get near the faucets and fill their containers. That they were impatient was not astonishing. For the past 5 days, they had had nothing to drink. If ever they found a little water, it had been stagnant and had not quenched their thirst. The SS guards who received the convoys were used to this scene. They waited patiently till each had quenched his thirst and filled his container. In any case, the guards knew that as long as they had not drunk, there would be no getting them back into line. Slowly they began to reform their ranks. Then they advanced for about 100 yards along a cinder path edged with green grass to an iron ramp, from which 10 or 12 concrete steps led underground to an enormous room dominated by a large sign in German, French, Greek, and Hungarian, "Baths and Disinfecting Room." The sign was reassuring and allayed the misgivings of fears of even the most suspicious among them. They went down the stairs almost gaily. The room into which the convoy proceeded was about 200 yards long. Its walls were whitewashed, and it was brightly lit. In the middle of the room, rows of columns. Around the columns, as well as along the walls, benches. Above the benches, numbered coat hangers. Numerous signs in several languages drew everyone's attention to the necessity of tying his clothes and shoes together. Especially that he not forget the number of his coat hanger, in order to avoid all useless confusion upon his return from the bath. "That's really a German order," commented those who had long been inclined to admire the Germans. They were right. As a matter of fact, it was for the sake of order that these measures had been taken, so that the thousands of pairs of good shoes sorely needed by the Third Reich would not get mixed up. The same for the clothes, so that the population of bombed cities could easily make use of them. There were 3,000 people in the room, men, women, and children. Some of the soldiers arrived and announced that everyone must be completely undressed within 10 minutes. The aged, grandfathers and grandmothers, the children, wives and husbands, all were struck dumb with surprise. Modest women and girls looked at each other questioningly. Perhaps they'd not understood exactly the German words. They didn't have long to think about it, however, for the order resounded again, this time in a louder, more menacing tone. They were uneasy. Their dignity rebelled, but with the resignation peculiar to their race, having learned that anything went as far as they were concerned, they slowly began to undress. The aged, the paralyzed, the mad were helped by a Sonderkommando squad sent for that purpose. In 10 minutes, all were completely naked. Their clothes hung on the pegs, their shoes attached together by the laces. As for the number of each clothes hanger, It had been carefully noted. And my comment, Emile Zola, describes the French miners and Germinal in very similar terms, referring to, quote, the traditional resignation of their race, unquote. This is the reason, in essence, for the scarcity mindset, keeping us trapped in mere survival, in mere surviving, doesn't give us time to think. Continuing. Making his way through the crowd, an SS opened the swing doors of the large oaken gate at the end of the room. The crowd flowed through it into another equally well-lighted room. The second room was the same size as the first, but neither benches nor pegs were to be seen. In the center of the rooms, at 30-yard intervals, columns arose from the concrete floor to the ceiling. They were not supporting columns, but square sheet iron pipes, the sides of which contained numerous perforations like a wire lattice. Everyone was inside. A hoarse command rang out. SS and Sonderkommando, leave the room. They obeyed and counted off. The doors swung shut, and from without, the lights were switched off. At that very instant, the sound of a car was heard, a deluxe model furnished by the International Red Cross. An SS officer and an SDG, Sanitas Dienstfreiter, Deputy Health Service Officer, stepped out of the car. The Deputy Health Officer held four green sheet iron canisters. He advanced across the grass where every 30 yards, short concrete pipes jutted up from the ground. Having donned his gas mask, he lifted the lid of the pipe, which was also made of concrete. He opened one of the cans and poured the contents, a mauve, granulated material, into the opening. The granulated substance fell in a lump to the bottom. The gas it produced escaped through the perforations, and within a few seconds filled the room in which the deportees were stacked. Within 5 minutes, everybody was dead. For every convoy, it was the same story. Red Cross cars brought the gas from the outside. There was never a stock of it in the crematorium. The precaution was scandalous, but still more scandalous was the fact that the gas was brought in a car bearing the insignia of the International Red Cross. In order to be certain of their business, the two gas butchers waited another 5 minutes. Then they lighted cigarettes and drove off in their car. They had just killed 3,000 innocents.